when Captain America throws his mighty shield. All those who chose to oppose his shield must yield. Then he's led to a fight, and a duel is due. Then the red and the white and the blue will come through when Captain America throws his mighty shield.
Welcome to a special edition of The Projection Booth. I'm Mike White, and with me is Mondo Justin.
Your vote, mein Herr!
We don't often do these special episodes. In fact, I think our last one was our special broadcast all about Jerry Lewis's The Day the Clown Cried. This time we're taking on something a little more accessible and a little less litigious, Captain America.
Which Captain America are we talking about here, Mike? You know, are we talking about the new Captain America with Chris Evans, or one of my favorite films, the 1990 Albert Pune Captain America?
No, we're going back to the 1979 Captain America with Reb
Brown. Yay!
Just kidding. Though that film holds a special place in my heart, especially all the motorcycle scenes, we're going to be focusing on the Pune and Johnson films. And we won't be doing it alone. We're joined this week by fellow jackalope jockey Josh Hadley from Radiodrome, Lost in the Static, and What the Fuck. Welcome aboard, Josh.
Thank you very much.
All right, let's get right into it. Let's talk about the Pune version a bit before we dive into Joe Johnson's flick. So, Justin, I know this is one of your favorite films, and I think you might be one of the few people who actually really likes Albert Pune's Captain America. I'm not even sure if Albert Pune likes it that much.
Listen, it's not a good film, but I appreciate it on a couple levels. I appreciate it, one, because Pune had the audacity to make the movie, and then I find it hilarious because you've got a Captain America movie where Captain America is only in his Captain America outfit for literally 10 minutes of screen time. You kind of just appreciate it as what it is, just a total Titanic disaster, and you can see why it didn't come out on DVD, but at the same time it is rewarding. It is really entertaining. It's got this all-star cast. It's got what I like to call the Deliverance reunion, you know, because the film features Ronnie Cox and Ned Beatty, so I'm just a little disappointed there's no, you know, he's got hair, no hair in his mouth, boy.
You mean no Burt Reynolds either, or the weird twisted kid? Though the weird twisted kid, he might have come back, you know, the inbred kid. He originally was set to play Captain America.
I think he was actually the Red Skull.
I don't know why they made the Red Skull Italian.
It was something against Nazis at the time. Movies were trying to move away from Nazis as villains, I read, something like that.
Ah, so 1990, Nazis were off the table by then? They'd been done to death?
You didn't see a whole lot of Nazi stuff. See, if you want to go to the Inbred Kid, maybe Bill Mumy was supposed to play him.
I'm watching the director's cut of Captain America the other day. I'm listening to the director's commentary, and at one point, Darren McGavin, one of my favorite guys, who unfortunately is in this movie, he pulls on his ear and Albert Pune says, "See right there, that's supposed to tell you that he's the same character that Billy Mumy played." Did you guys pick up on that? Did you pick up on that at all?
I picked up on that. When I saw him tug on his ear, I went, "Oh, come on." I'm like, "You've got to be kidding me. Really?" I could never see Bill Mumy grow up to be Kolchak the Night Stalker.
Yeah, I'm amazed that you picked up on that, Josh. I'm going to bow at your feet for that one. That was great.
Because I thought it was weird that Bill Mumy in the past scenes kept tugging on his ear. I started to think, okay, that's got to be a character trait thing. Because it just came out of nowhere. And then when I saw that Kolchak do it, I'm like, "Oh, come on."
But Bill Mumy didn't seem like he was a douche when he was a young kid, and Darren McGavin's totally playing a douche.
But Darren McGavin's the only actor on this cast that looks like he's having a good time, too.
And this is the first time I've heard the words Darren McGavin and douche in the same sentence.
Well, you need to listen to my Night Stalker podcast sometime.
My biggest problem with this movie, besides the Italian Red Skull, is Burke from Revenge of the Nerds as Captain America.
Yeah. But listen, and that's a great point, because obviously, you know, I know him from the first thing I think of when I think of him is Revenge of the Nerds as well. But a lot of people might not realize that that's actually his name is Matt Salinger, and he's J.D. Salinger's son. He's like the third in command for the nerds. There's Ted McGinley, Stan Gable, then Ogre, and then Matt Salinger's the third under.
Justin, how many Revenge of the Nerds references are you going to make throughout our history as a podcast?
This is number four, right? Because I've done like three Takashi references, and now I've referenced nerds here. But actually, Josh was the one who referenced nerds the first time here.
Okay, well, you talked about Poindexter, too, and playing that violin and stuff.
Oh, yeah. All right, good deal.
And then I'm sure that Lost Robert Carradine interview probably had all kinds of stuff about Revenge of the Nerds in there. I hadn't seen the Pune version until, I will tell you exactly the day that I saw it. I saw it on April 2nd, 2011. It was right after we got done talking to Albert Pune, because you were just so effusive about it.
I'm a huge admirer. I've seen like almost everything you've done. Right off the top of my head, I've got to ask you about Captain America because I love that movie so much. And so I know it's coming to DVD, and I wanted to know what fans can expect versus your cut and versus the supposed director's cut that's coming out on DVD.
When we started Captain America, it was a really fine script, but it was an expensive script. And we had thought that we had the financing in place when we began, and then it quickly dissipated, and the deal never closed for the financing. So all the way through the shooting, we were having to compromise a lot. And, you know, we knew we weren't ever going to have the funding that we would need to actually bring that script to the screen. So we began a sort of a shift towards it being more character-oriented. And I had done a short film in the early 70s that dealt with Superman as a middle-aged man and no longer fitting into the modern world. Eventually, he's living in a flop house. Even when he tries to do good, he's really vilified for it because, you know, he's like stepping on people's rights and he doesn't have the right, he's not politically correct and all these things. So the short ends with Superman committing suicide with kryptonite because he just can't bear to live in the world anymore. So I sort of had that idea then with Captain America is what, you know, Captain America is somebody who was, you know, was sort of sold a bill of goods that he was going to be part first of these super soldiers. You know, they needed these super soldiers to be able to turn the tide against in the World War II and all these great things. And he being a really patriotic kid, he bought into all that. And of course, none of it came true. He was the only super soldier. He ended up being frozen in ice for 40 years. So the girl that he loved and everything that he loved about the world, when he woke up, was all gone, and he was really faced with the fact that the world that came out of that World War II battle with so much sacrifice was not the world that he thought would, you know, eventually come out of World War II, and was disappointed in it. And I think that that was the side of the character and the story that we really started to focus on more and more because we had the budget to do that story. And I think we did that pretty well, except when the studio saw it, they obviously went, wait a minute, you can't have a depressed Captain America. You can't have a troubled Captain America. You can't have a Captain America that hates the modern world. You can't have, you know, it's all these issues came up because it wasn't necessarily the most commercial movie, but I thought it was a better movie than what was released because they tried to make it, they took it away and tried to make it into a superhero action movie, like a tentpole movie, and it just had no money in it. So how were you, you know, I didn't understand how it could be done. So eventually, you know, I left the picture, and then just really a few years ago, I noticed that I had these film cans, and in the film cans was the actual last cut that I did for Captain America, and it was really a long sort of character version of the film, and that's what we're going to release in May.
I think it's the most correct comic book movie casting of all time, because Matt Salinger doesn't come across as a huge star, so how did you find Matt for Captain America?
Well, we were auditioning a lot of people, and I'd actually been talking to Howie Long, the ex-football player, but he would play Steve Rogers after the experiment. And so we were looking for somebody that could play him before. And Marvel nixed the idea of two different actors playing the character of Steve Rogers. So I was faced with finding somebody that could work for both sides. And, you know, I mean, there was no CG in that time period. And so it was difficult to, how do you sell somebody as a weakling who looks like a weakling and then has to sell also as a sort of super enhanced warrior? What I really liked about Matt is, one, he was tall and lean, so it gave us some flexibility in what we could do with him physically. But also, I thought he brought a certain off sensibility. He's like somebody that has an inner core that of depth and intelligence, but there's something a little off in him. And I thought that, you know, that really worked for this character, where it would really sell the idea that somebody could go through this whole thing and be troubled by the decisions that he made and the sort of the propaganda that he bought into. You know, I thought Matt really brought that to the table, that depth.
You know, with the new Captain America movie coming out, do you ever have any concerns that, because your film never came out on DVD, basically, like, do you ever have any concerns that your film is going to be overlooked or overshadowed because of this new Captain America film? And how do you think fans are going to compare the two?
Well, they're going to be totally different, because I think that the one that's coming out is going to have a huge budget. It's going to be a lot of big action set pieces. It's going to be a lot of special effects. And I think ours is more like a meditative character piece of Captain America. Captain America as a troubled young man as opposed to a gung-ho warrior. So I think it'd be that difference that people will see right off the bat. I think the version that I ended up doing, my director's cut, was much more tragic. At the end of it, nobody wins. It's everybody's loss, having gone through this whole thing. It was just a loss. So there's no winners in mind. And it's very melancholy and rather sad, because no matter what happens with Captain America, he's never going to get back what he wanted, which was his life. And the girl, yeah, she's old now. And, you know, it's very sad. There's no joy in it for him at all in being Captain America. And he starts to realize that he was just really used as a propaganda symbol by the government. And none of the things that they were saying and sort of feeding him was true. And so I think for people, it's going to be a little bit of a whiplash in the sense that I think the one that comes out in the summer is going to be rah-rah and, you know, and it's going to be all flag-waving and patriotic and all about superheroes. Whereas I think that then they'll see the movie that I made and they'll realize that there was a heavy price to be paid by this, that this was a person who made a decision to do this, and it was a bad decision in his mind, and he regrets it, and he'll regret it the rest of his life.
Right, yeah. Listen, I love your movie. I love your Captain America so much. It's one of my favorite movies. And I'll tell you, though, I was always upset that Matt Salinger never tapped that, even though she was 60 years old.
I know. But, you know, when you see the director's cut, which is longer with those scenes, and I think that you'll understand it. I think he would if she had lived. You know, I mean, I think he wanted to rekindle that, even though she was married and had a husband and a daughter. I think he was willing to revisit that, and that's more clear in the version in the director's cut.
If it's that great, I guess I'll try it, because I thought I had seen scenes from it, because a friend of mine, Elman Akarma, he always posts scenes from Captain America, but it turns out he does the 1979 one, which is just amazing. Have you guys seen that one?
Oh, yeah.
The second one's even better, where Christopher Lee plays a Latino.
Oh,
yes. Wow. Because of the new film, they just showed the 1978 Captain America, the 1979 Captain America 2, and then the 1990 Captain America on Sci-Fi last week.
Wow.
Before we go further, Mike, you just talked about the 1990 Captain America, but you failed to tell us what you actually thought of the movie.
It was so riveting that first day that I watched it that I think we left about maybe 45 minutes into it, and we came back. And I was like, this thing's still on? And I didn't realize that the disc kind of was just repeating. So I ended up watching the rest of it then. And it was just like, yeah, this one really isn't doing it for me. It just wasn't holding my interest as much as it should have. I watched it again 3 times this week.
I'm sorry. I mean, I like it, but I like it 3 times a week.
Well, I had to watch the original version that came out, and then I watched the director's cut, and then I watched it again with the audio commentary on. So I've had my fill of Captain America this week.
I know that you probably are not a fan of it, and that's fine. But the thing is it is pretty faithful to the comic book. That's the thing about it that I like, you know. And you know, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but you see a lot of the things going on in the 1990 film that you see the filmmakers taking to this new 2011 version as well.
I don't know how it is that you are here, or how you remain so unchanged, but it doesn't matter, my brother. Today, die. 50 years ago, you were Dr. Vasselli's ridiculous idea. You remain a clownish symbol that no one cares about.
I care.
You care. Then come to me, my brother. Let us see if this heart of yours is stronger than my hate.
I think you guys are leaving out a key Captain America film, 3 Dev Adam. That's the best Captain America film ever.
That is a pretty great Captain America in there. And then that's like a Marvel team up, isn't it? Because isn't Spider-Man in there as well?
Spider-Man's the villain, and he stabs people with knives and runs boat motors into their face and has their faces chewed off by guinea pigs.
See, now that's the kind of Spider-Man I would like to see. Rather than that emo Spider-Man of Spider-Man 3, I'd really rather see that kind of a Spider-Man. If you're going to go bad from the black suit, go bad with gerbils.
Guinea pigs, actually, but yes.
Sorry. Well, sorry. You can go bad either way with guinea pigs or gerbils, but...
What do we think about this 1990 Captain America? I mean, what do you think of the performances? You know, what do you think of Pune's direction, storyline? Why did it basically, despite itself, why did this film happen in the first place? How's that?
I think, honestly, because Canon lost the rights to Spider-Man. Because, you remember, Pune was getting ready to do the live-action Spider-Man. And I think this was the default when they lost the rights back to Marvel.
Yeah, I do remember that, actually. I think you're right.
What do you guys think is better, this one or the Fantastic Four that Corman made?
Oh, the Corman Fantastic Four.
Fantastic Four, easily.
Yeah.
Wow, really?
I really liked the Fantastic Four. I really did.
I just like anything that's not CGI. How's that? So I have a respect for, you know, for Corman's vision of Fantastic Four.
I personally loved the Human Torch, the animated, almost holographic Human Torch effect. I loved that.
I just loved how gay the Human Torch was in that. He was just like, he was en fuego in quite a few ways. I think that's why he embodied that, the fire, you know, because they all kind of got their, you know, the one guy was really gruff and very stony and became the Thing, and no one paid attention to Sue Storm, and she became the Invisible Girl, and I still don't understand how water and stretching, I mean, there is kind of a weird metaphor there, but, and I still don't get why Reed Richards became that, and I don't get why he calls himself Mr. Fantastic instead of, like, Stretcho or something like that.
Well, it's because that's what the ladies called him in bed.
Oh.
Even before the accident.
The one thing that I love about the Captain America 1990 is his amazing ability for subterfuge. Like when he does the whole, please stop the car, I'm going to be sick, and then steals the car. Awesome. And that he gets to do it twice is even better.
I think I'm going to be sick.
What?
Would you please pull over the car? I am going to get sick.
Oh, okay, all right. Hey! Captain! Are you okay? Hold it! Wait! Don't leave me out of here!
He knows how to pull the wool over people's eyes.
Yeah. In a big way.
I don't know. I just really appreciate the love story elements of the Captain America, you know, of the 1990 Pune version. I mean, it is a very bad movie, you know, but it's highly entertaining. It's so bad that it's so good.
When you talk about the love relationship, you're talking about Matt Salinger and Ronnie Cox, right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Yes.
I saw you long ago when you were flying through the night sky, and I took a photo of you, and I've loved you ever since.
Right, but this think about it, that happens there, and then you have that same storyline going in the new film as well, too. Somehow, some way, he's going to end up frozen for 7 years. You know, it's like they took this new film took that idea and made it 100% better.
I will say that I liked, and I don't know if they're going to do this in the Avengers, showing Captain America coming back to his lost love, who in this case is not Ronnie Cox, having him come back and seeing that she's married somebody else, you know, having that whole thing where, you know, the world has moved on, but he hasn't kind of thing. I don't know if they're going to do that in the Avengers. I kind of hope that they do, because to me that gives the character a little bit of depth. And I did like that they did that in the Albert Pune version, though I don't think that they necessarily did it that great.
In the Pune version, they did that too early in the movie, I think.
I agree. And it was weird, too, that though they were very faithful, well, other than the Italian Red Skull, they were
right. It's true.
They were fairly faithful with a lot of characters, but they really didn't give him a Bucky.
Right,
that kind of
right.
Sucked.
The part I hated, Mike, was the fact that Captain America was pretty ineffectual. He got his ass kicked by the Red Skull multiple times. He got his ass kicked by all the henchmen. He was constantly being captured. He wasn't really that effective of a superhero.
Well, I don't know if he's that effective of a superhero as it is. I mean, he's strong, he's fast, you know, it's just his physical prowess is enhanced, but you know, I think you can still shoot him.
If he can duck away, you know, Mass Effect style and hide behind something for a minute, he can get his strength back.
But he's no Wolverine when it comes to his healing ability, is he?
No, but he also has, according to this movie, the unique ability to throw his shield only in insert shots.
And he also has the unique ability to wear Bermuda wear really nice, too. You guys are forgetting that Captain America as a superhero was, you know, pretty much invented out of necessity. You know, you had him coming around right as World War II was in its finest hour, you know, when Americans needed some kind of figure to look up to, you know. It's like he's almost propaganda for children, you know. He's very American. He's telling kids to be very American, to fight evil. The Nazis are evil. So it's a little exploitive, I think, you know, in a way that this character was created when he was and, you know, how successful he was, because he's probably my least favorite superhero, actually.
One thing I really did like about this movie was the little sly references to the Human Torch and Namor.
Where were those at?
When he was showing the picture to young Ned Beatty.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Right.
I really
right.
thought that was an interesting thing, almost hinting at the larger Marvel universe that canon would never be able to do. We don't have the rights to these characters, but we can mention them. I got a question for you since you've seen the director's cut. Does Michael Norrie actually have anything to do in the director's cut, or is he still just kind of wander around aimlessly like in the theatrical version?
Justin, you are much more of the expert on the Pune version. I didn't really see that many differences other than the way that he framed the story by taking part of the end and moving it to the beginning. Were there
That's it.
Things?
No, that's it.
Oh, my God.
I told you, that's it. That's all he did. I put them both up to each other, and there's only like 3.5 minutes of difference, and all it is him restructuring things. That's all it is.
Oh, yeah.
Because I remember when I was watching this the other day, the scene where he's in the past and he's about to attack the Red Skull, Michael Norrie has a line like, "Once you meet your two contacts in the woods, they'll get you there." And they show Captain America parachute out, and then immediately attack the Nazi stronghold or the Italian stronghold. Where are these two contacts he was meeting in the woods?
Yeah, they don't give Norrie much to do. No, they don't give him anything to do after that. No.
No, because he's a good actor and he was just wasted in that movie.
Well, there's a lot of people. This is a really significant cast. The whole cast is wasted.
Yeah. True. Yeah. I mean, Ronnie Cox, Ned Beatty, Darren McGavin, all in one movie together. And it's like, you know, that to me is a dream cast. Put a Waka Waka guitar behind that and set it in 1974. And I'm just like, yeah, man, let's see some, you know, some action here. No, sorry.
You know, I mentioned earlier there's a Deliverance reunion. There's also a Christmas Story reunion, too, in the Captain America 1990, because it has Darren McGavin and Melinda Dillon is in this movie, too. You know, she was the mom in Christmas Story.
And she got star billing. She got, like, fourth billing, and she's got, what, three and a half minutes of screen time?
If that, even, yeah.
I was like, I kept waiting for her to come back for some reason or a flashback or something. I'm like, how do you have Melinda Dillon and you just throw her character away?
1990 Captain America, good or bad, just make a definitive statement now.
Bad.
Not good.
Not good. I'm going to answer mine as fun. You know,
would you have had fun in 1990 if you saw it in the theater, though?
Yeah, I did, frankly, because I rented it right when it came out when I was younger.
No, I'm talking the theatrical experience is different. If you'd have paid $7 to see that in the theater.
Yeah, I would have.
Trust me, Josh, you like some weird things.
I got no problem with that. I just, this is one, I can't countenance with this one.
I try, every day, I try to find at least one thing good in anything I watch. And there's only been a couple times I've never been able to do that. One was the Van Zandt remake of Psycho, pulling that card again. Two, the Tim Burton remake of Planet of the Apes.
Okay, I'll give you both those.
Nothing redeeming any of those. Can I find one good thing? Those are the only two movies in my entire life I've walked out of.
I walked out of Star Trek V, and I'm a huge Star Trek fan.
I actually made some of my friends suffer through Star Trek V, and I felt so guilty afterwards. We were at a Star Trek marathon. Yes, I did just say those words. And everyone was ready to leave after 4, and I'm like, well, I've never seen 5. And they bit the bullet, man. Those are true friends, you know?
Those are
like guys that you went to war with.
So did you feel a little sick to your stomach at Uhura's fan dance?
I got a boner, actually.
It's funny because I was just listening to another podcast today. I was listening to the Rue Morgue podcast, and they were talking about the Row, Row, Row Your Boat scene. And then they played the audio from it, and it just got 10 times worse, 100 times.
Hey, at least Star Trek VI was a good apology.
I have big problems with Star Trek VI. I'm like probably one of the few people that do. I have big problems with them adding that new character in there when it should have been Saavik. Yeah, and just it really took away all the impact that it could have had.
Right, but it also had Worf's grandfather, and that's really cool.
As played by Worf.
Yeah, as played by Michael Dorn. And Dr. McCoy actually gets to do something, and he's the all-time best Star Trek character.
I don't know. I wish I could have raised the stakes in that one. I guess the problem that I had with that one, and this is probably going to all end up on the editing room floor, who knows. The problem that I had with that is that we had already had so many years of friendly Klingons with the Next Generation that to kind of go back in time and really try to divorce myself from Next Gen and go back into that original Star Trek universe and be like, oh yeah, these guys are evil now, but they're really kind of cool in the future. So that's, I just had issues with that too.
All right, did we go back to Captain America?
Yeah,
we probably should. Josh, you haven't seen the new Captain America, correct?
I've hated every Marvel movie pretty much made, and the old Captain America didn't change that from me. My theater only has it in 3D, and it's like there's no way I'm paying that to go see a movie I don't care about anyway.
There's no reason to see it in 3D.
I think Mike and I both saw it in 2D.
I've heard the 3D is terrible. I've heard it looks like a post conversion.
That was so cheap that I saw it in 1D actually.
Would 1D just be the audio?
It's time. The dimension of time. He just sat in an empty theater for 2 hours.
You know, in the new film, it takes about 45 minutes for Steve Rogers to become Captain America. And then in the 1990 Albert Pyuna film, it takes about 5 minutes. I mean, is this a little too long for Steve Rogers to become Captain America, you think? I mean, this is really a point of contention for me in terms of the new film.
I would have to agree, because really, he's not that interesting of a character before he becomes Captain America.
But they're not just showing him at the beginning. They're doing a lot of building up of different things, and they're showing what the Red Skull is doing. They're not really given a whole lot of the history of the Red Skull. You know, they just pretty much do that in just a slight flashback.
So many people forget that the first country the Nazis invaded was their own. You know, after the last war, my people struggled. They felt weak, they felt small. And then Hitler comes along with the marching and the big show and the flags. And he hears of me, my work, and he finds me. And he says, you will make us strong. Well, I am not interested. So he sends the head of Hydra, his research division, a brilliant scientist by the name of Johann Schmidt. Now, Schmidt is a member of the inner circle, and he is ambitious. He and Hitler share a passion for occult power and Teutonic. Hitler uses his fantasies to inspire his followers. But for Schmidt, it is not fantasy. For him, it is real. He has become convinced that there is a great power hidden in the earth, left here by the gods, waiting to be seized by a superior man. So when he hears about my formula and what it can do, he cannot resist. Schmidt must become that superior man.
Did it make him stronger?
Yeah, but there were other effects. The scene was not ready, but more important, the men.
I almost wish there had been a little bit more with that one. They're dealing with the Red Skull. They're setting up this and that. And they're even setting up Howard Stark, bringing him back into the story, giving you more of the Marvel Universe at that time. I mean, the movie clocks in about what? So just north of 2 hours. I would think that you should probably have turned him into Captain America right around the 30-minute mark.
You know, that's one thing, you know, that Pune's film does good is it gives you a really good background on the Red Skull. And you get this, you know, he was abducted and he played piano. You know what I'm saying? And then you've got in the new film, you've got the Red Skull as just this super ruthless villain that wants to destroy the world. There's no humanity to that new Hugo Weaving Red Skull whatsoever.
The one thing that I did like was that he used the formula. He was too impatient, and that's why he turned into the Red Skull, that it brought out his inner self, and that Captain America, Steve Rogers, had that inner strength and all that kind of stuff. And so the formula just enhances what's already there. It's kind of going back to what I was saying with the Fantastic Four earlier about, you know, kind of bringing out your inner strengths as your superpower.
My problem with the Red Skull in the 1990 version is he was only the Red Skull for, what, 10 minutes of screen time.
Yeah, and then he kind of became a gangster. A gangster with bad plastic surgery and like a pink face.
Did you notice that the actor that plays the Red Skull also plays the doctor?
Yes, I did. I did. Absolutely. He's got two roles. And he's also the dad in Christian Slater's Pump Up the Volume. I remember him from that, too.
I really liked Hugo Weaving's performance as the Red Skull. And what I really liked about him was that he had to have based his accent on Werner Herzog. I kept waiting for him to start talking about cave paintings.
He was really great in the movie, actually. It was really nice to see him because I'm not a huge fan of his. I mean, I never enjoy the films he does. Like, I'm not a big Matrix fan. And, you know, I think the last time I saw him in something really good, I think, wasn't he in Priscilla, Queen of the Desert?
He was awesome in Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. And there's a movie called Proof that he was in with Russell Crowe. Yeah, and I love that film. So I've kind of been a fan of his ever since then. Kind of, sometimes he can wear out his welcome. And it was really like Hugo Weaving weekend for me. I really should have prefaced this whole conversation by saying this, that the day before I saw Captain America, the new one, I went and saw Transformers 3. So pretty much you could have like a scat film named Captain America and it would look better than what I had just experienced.
Yeah, I haven't seen Transformers 3 yet. I don't know if I want to. I really hated number two, but I like number one, though, actually.
Two is actually better than three.
That's rough. That three must be really rough.
It's very rough. And I don't know what Leonard Nimoy was thinking, but he is just whoring himself in that movie, and there are Star Trek references all over the place. He even uses the good of the many outweighs the good of the few.
Am I the only one that sees the Leonard Nimoy Orson Welles comparison with the Transformers, the movies?
I can see that there, though I don't know. I still have more respect for Orson than I do for Leonard by doing that.
I think the new Captain America and the Albert Pune Captain America are very similar in plot line. You know, I think the new film takes a great idea and then implements it and makes it 100% better. What do you think?
Yeah, I have a couple problems with the new Captain America, but I did enjoy it more than the Pune version. I didn't really like that they were being so uber politically correct. You know, this was the 1940s. This isn't the 1990s. And they really didn't have to show that the United States Army was a, you know, rainbow coalition of all these people, because that's not the way that it was. I mean, you can, maybe in the Marvel Universe, black soldiers fought alongside with Asian soldiers, fought alongside with whites and guys in bowler hats. But that's not
my God, I hated him.
I don't understand why that dude was wearing a bowler hat. I was hoping he'd have like an Irish accent or something to explain the bowler hat.
I know. I was like, I was waiting for him to say, like, well, I just walked over from the set of gangs in New York. I just wanted to check what was going on.
I was waiting for it to be like, you know, call blimey, governor, you know, but
yeah.
Is it time to get on the Titanic yet?
But seriously, I decided that, you know, I had quite a few problems with the new Captain America, but I decided after thinking about it for a few days and really mulling it over, you know, I just decided that I'm not going to nitpick it. I'm done with nitpicking films, I think, for a while. And so ultimately what it's going to come down to me at this point is I'm going to put my thoughts aside on some certain, you know, issues I had with the new film. And I'm just going to, I ask myself purely, did I enjoy it? Yes or no? Was I entertained? Yes or no? And my answer for both those is yes and yes. So I am pretty happy with the experience. I mean, I went out and bought the soundtrack. I mean, I'm just going to leave it at that. And I think it is really entertaining, and I think it does a really good job. You know, just the new film, the sequence, you know, after the post Steve Rogers becoming Captain America sequence, where he's like the spokesman of the United States and he's going around the country selling bonds. That is a genius filmmaking. Just beautiful editing, totally puts you back in that era. I think it maybe is a little overkill, but it's just so good.
Who's strong and brave here to save the American way?
One thing I really like about the new Captain America is their decision of casting. And I'll tell you why, because, you know, with the exception of Thor, of course, you have these other films, these superhero films that are coming out. They all have huge stars in them. And what I find so appealing about this new film is Chris Evans is a star, but he's not a big enough star yet to where he's a household name or everyone knows what he looks like. And for me, that's what really sells this movie. And I think that's maybe why I liked it so much, is I didn't feel like I was watching a Hollywood movie. I felt like I was watching a real movie.
Well, I am glad that it was Chris Evans. I actually really like Chris Evans a lot. I think he's got a really good sense of humor about himself. And it was nice to see him in a good superhero movie, a good comic book adaptation, because I loved The Losers. I thought he was terrific in The Losers, and I love The Losers comic book. I love the movie. I don't think it got nearly as much attention as it should have. But then the other two comic book movies that he's been in, I'm not a big fan of Scott Pilgrim versus the World, though I did like him in it quite a bit. I liked him, and I liked Brandon Routh a whole lot, but I can't stand Michael Cera. I really hated the Fantastic Four movies that they put out, so it was nice to see him kind of redeem himself a little bit with Cap, and I thought he was perfect in the role.
Yeah, listen, I think all around the new film was cast really good, you know, and it does have some legitimacy with the casting of Tommy Lee Jones, which he's great in this movie, and he doesn't overshadow anyone, you know. It was really nice to see him pop up in this film.
I was just so fascinated by Tommy Lee Jones's ears. What is going on with his ears? Like, the older he gets, the longer they get. It's kind of strange.
What Tommy Lee Jones was doing was trying to reprise this role in The Park Is Mine.
Oh, God, I haven't seen that in forever.
It's so good.
No, I've seen it when I was a kid. It's been like a good 20 years.
So, Mike, you know, since you and I are the only ones that have seen the new film, you know, what did you think about Cap's costume in the new movie versus something like the 1978 film or the 1990 version?
I liked it. I thought that it worked very well. I liked that they kind of were playing with it by having him do that whole War Bonds thing. And I, like you, I liked that montage as well. And I liked that he had kind of the different looks as he went along. And I liked that they explained why he was wearing the costume that he was wearing and why he felt the need to dress the way that he was dressed and everything. And I didn't think it looked nearly as cheesy as some of the other costumes. And I thought at first I was going to have problems with the little wings on his head. And I don't know, I just kind of overlooked it. No issues there. And I'm glad that it was not, like, you know, painted onto his helmet, kind of like the 79 version.
Yeah, I think the costume worked. It was contemporary, you know. The film actually, you know, the Captain America, the new one, it reminded me, the script structure very much reminded me of David Lynch's Dune, because I sat there for 45 minutes and I'm really into it, and then you get this nutty transition. I'm just like, Jesus, like, how long are we going to be in this movie?
In the four standard years that followed.
And that's literally what happened. You get a montage that advances you to the story, and I'm just like, why would you do that? Like, why don't you just spend a little less time in the front and put some more time in the middle? You know, like, I wasn't saying I was going to nitpick anything, but I had real problems with the love story in the new film, so.
Yeah, I didn't necessarily have that many problems with it, because I thought the girl was really super hot, and I'm glad that her lipstick stayed on, and it stayed so red throughout the entire film, so that's
right.
Looking good. She had that hot British accent and stuff. It was working for me.
I just had a problem with the fact that she was, like, this supposed total badass for the first half of the movie, and then the last half of the movie, she was, like, this sad, emoting, you know, female trying to have Captain America notice her. With those issues aside, one thing I really did like about the film was its ending. I thought it was really, really well done, and I was surprised that they chose to end the film that way. And, you know, I don't think we should really give it away, but I was really pleased with it in a cameo at the end as well.
Well, I think that they did a really good job of taking us right up to the point of the Avengers, because I don't know if you've read the Ultimates, the Mark Miller or Millar, I don't know how you pronounce it, but it's one of those names that I only read, I never hear, his comic updating of the Avengers. That's pretty much the basis of all of these new Marvel movies. Like, when they drew that, they very purposefully drew Nick Fury, first off, as a black guy, second off, as a complete Samuel L. Jackson clone. And so by casting him, it was basically saying, yes, we're taking what you said, and we're going to try to build these movies out to be similar to the Ultimates. And those are really kind of cool comics. I don't know, like I said, have you guys had a chance to read those?
No, I haven't, but you're forgetting the Nick Fury movie, too, by the way.
Oh, God.
Well, I've read the Ultimates, and I can't stand that. I'm a traditionalist. I want the Marvel heroes I grew up with, not the contemporary Marvel heroes where they've all got ponytails and make Lady Gaga references. I can't stand that. And I'd prefer a world where Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch are not lovers, since they're brother and sister.
See, that kind of gave me a Star Wars feel to it.
Or a world where Magneto's wife didn't bang Wolverine.
Because I will say that I read those when they were originally out, so what, like 2002 or something. So it's been a little while. And I will say that I liked the first two books of those. And that might have had the stuff that you're talking about in there, because I know that for sure that I saw Wanda and Pietro. Pietro, okay. Again, one of those names I read, I never say or hear. The third one, where it was, I think it was called Homeland Security. Oh my God, it was like, what happened here? I thought the writing was so strong in the first.
Is that the one where the blob literally eats the wasp, he cannibalizes her?
I've really tried to drive it out of my head. I just remember that I actually cared about Captain America in those first two books, you know, because I will say flat out that I've never really been a huge Captain America fan. Like, I didn't really pick him up until I was well into the comics world, and then was just kind of one of those holes where it's like, read about this in Captain America 359 or whatever. So it's like, okay, geez, I got to pick this thing up and I'll read this one. I always kind of thought that he was more of like this jingoistic, you know, yeah, rah, rah, America kind of thing, where it was just thought that he was kind of cool in the Ultimates. And then in the third one is when I thought that he kind of fell back into that, where it was like, we're going to save the world. And he kind of came that like Team America, World Police kind of guy again.
A really cool Captain America is the Marvel Zombies Cap. Before he became a zombie, he was actually Veep of the United States too.
So you don't like when Marvel superheroes make Lady Gaga references, but you're okay if they're zombies?
Marvel Zombies was a really fun series for the first three of them. And they got to fight Ash from Evil Dead movies too.
You will find no argument for me. I like the Marvel Zombies as well. And I loved that they did all the classic covers as zombie covers.
Marvel Zombies was great, and Cap was really cool, missing half his brain. Well, he had one of the best deaths ever at the hands of the Red Skull, too.
Yeah, I like that, and I don't know. I really like the Ultimates, and I like that they had some adult themes going on there. I like the, and I'm sure that they won't have this in the Avengers, because I don't even think that Hank Pym and the Wasp are in it, but that they had the whole domestic abuse thing going on between them. I thought that was an interesting angle.
Wasp is in it. I'm pretty sure I've read somewhere that Wasp is one of the new characters that's added for it.
You know, I heard that, I can't remember, I think it was Edgar Wright wanted to do a Giant Man movie.
Giant Man's not that interesting of a character. Hank Pym. Hank Pym is a much more interesting character than the Giant Man version.
Well, maybe it would have been the Hank Pym movie.
But I don't think that would have sold to a national audience as well as it would have sold to just comic book fans. And Justin's just like, well, you two nerds, shut up.
Sorry, I'm listening. I just, I'm not a big comic guy, so. Yeah, so I'm really pissed that the Hoff didn't come back for Nick Fury.
I'm wondering what you guys both think about Captain America being in a modern world, because in the Pune version, he was in the modern world for, what, 90% of the movie, 80% at least, and in this one, he's only in it. We get to the point where he's going to be living in a modern world. So do you think Captain America works in today's world? How do you think it's going to work, a Marvel universe of today with a modern Captain America?
I think he's in the military, in the reserves, and he's working at Subway. I think the character is a little, you know, past his poignancy. And then also, I think with the current war situation in Iraq going, that, you know, people might look to him as inspiration, or, you know, see him as maybe a gentle reminder of American patriotism.
I like Cap in the modern world. I like that whole fish out of water thing, even in the 1990 film, how just renting a video. I like that kind of stuff. I think Cap in the modern world is a good thing, because he really doesn't fit, and that's part of his character, is that he doesn't fit into this new world.
He's kind of the unfrozen caveman lawyer of comic book characters.
Well, are you guys going to do anything with using the old clips from the cartoons or the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends episodes with Cap?
I'm for sure going to start off the entire episode with the When Captain America Throws His Mighty Shield song.
Good, because I was going to say I'd lose respect for you if you didn't, because that's so goofy it has to be done. But he was also, his appearances on Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends were decent as well. They actually nailed the character pretty decently.
That was one of those weird cartoons where I never knew when it was going to play.
It was NBC Saturday morning. It was teamed up with The Incredible Hulk. I have a bunch of original air.
I don't remember an Incredible Hulk cartoon, but I remember the Spider-Man and His Friends show, because that was the show that had Iceman and Firestorm, right?
Firestar.
Firestarter. Yeah, I have the whole series, but...
But no, Captain America was in the Seven Little Superheroes episode, along with Doctor Strange and Prince Namor. And he was also in something with the Kingpin, where the Kingpin brainwashed him into trying to assassinate the president. So Cap was in two of those. Ironically enough, not in the episode with the Red Skull. That episode with the Red Skull was banned, though. It was never shown in syndication because of all the swastikas, and they actually Heil Hitler twice in it. So that episode never aired outside of the NBC airings.
See, I knew there was a reason why we brought you on this show.
Nerd knowledge.
Justin, final thoughts on the Albert Pune or Joe Johnston Captain America?
Albert Pune, I think it is so bad it's good. And for that reason alone, you should watch it. And then the new film, like I said, without nitpicking, I think it's a super enjoyable experience. They do a really great job on it. So I think everyone should see the new film, totally.
All right, Josh?
Haven't seen the new one. As bad as it was, I did enjoy the 1991 on a certain level, like Justin said, in a so bad it's good way. But it's not a good movie. And it's not an easy movie to sit through. And I couldn't do it three times in one week like you did.
Take one for the team sometimes, you know. But I would say, go ahead. If it comes to the dollar show, go for it. I totally recommend it, Josh.
Maybe.
I would say also, you had mentioned earlier that you're not a big fan of Iron Man, or you hadn't seen Iron Man 2 or The Hulk 2. The right. Hulk, I would say, maybe rent it, maybe. Iron Man 2, stay away. Stay away.
Skip all the Hulks, unless it's the Trial of Incredible Hulk movie from the early 80s. Iron Man, skip.
I love the original Iron Man. I love the Robert Downey Jr. Iron Man, the first one.
Really? Yeah. I hated it.
I would have preferred a Morton Downey Jr. Iron Man. Me too! The only reason I want to see Iron Man 2 is Scarlett Johansson as Black Widow. That's the only thing that's still got it on my maybe list.
She just doesn't do it for me, and she really doesn't do it for me in that movie either, but...
I hope she has the short hair, because I always thought Black Widow, I'm not into chicks with short hair normally, but the character always looked weird with the long hair to me.
It's kind of like above the shoulders, not real short, but it's shorter than it was in Iron Man 2.
Okay.
Hopefully that makes you happy.
If I see the movie.
Okay. That brings us to the end of a very special episode of The Projection Booth. I wanted to thank our guest, Josh Hadley, for taking the time to hang out with us. You can catch Josh on Jackalope every Saturday night at 8 on Lost in the Static, midnight Saturday for What the Fuck, and every Thursday night at 10 p.m. on Radiodrome.
Thank you very much.
And listen to us each week on Jackalope on Thursday at 7 p.m. or catch us on iTunes or at projection-booth.com.
All right, fellas, let's go out and save the world one podcast at a time.
Ahoy, mateys. This is K.A.B., Antonio Bay. Stevie Wayne here, beaming a signal across the sea. I'll be here playing music all through the witching hour. I'm still waiting to hear from that weatherman. But in the meantime, stay here with me. Be sure to visit our sponsor, Paracinema Magazine. They're the source for all your genre movie needs. Check them out online at paracinema.net. Tell them Stevie sent you. Keep me turned on for a while, and I'll do my best to do the same for you.
The smooth sound. Fabulous 1340 KAB.
The ugly bruise of fear is swollen and festering.
A claw-fingered, scaly-skinned, half-human crustacean.
The black hole of despair. The clenched fist of doubt.
A frenzied bedlam of blood-curdling horror.
What if things were really getting better?
Hold on, folks. We're express to the top floor.
The Vertical Pandemonium Audio Theater. Only on mentalradio.net.
I'll be coming for her. And I'll be coming for you, too.
Sure you will. And I'll be waiting.
You are about to enter a world unlike any you've ever seen before, where rock and roll is king. The only law is a loaded gun. Where the beautiful...
Stay and see the show, it's really good.
The brutal...
I want Tom Cody.
And the brave all meet.
From now on, it's for real.
In Streets of Fire.
You're lying in your bed and on a Saturday night. You're sweating buckets and it's not even hot. But your brain has got the message and it's sending it out to every nerve and every muscle you got. You got so many dreams that you don't know where to put them, so you better turn a few of them loose. Your body's got a feeling that it's starting to rust. You better rev it up and put it to use.
Now, from the creators of 48 Hours, Universal Pictures presents Michael Paré, Diane Lane, Rick Moranis, and Amy Madigan in a Walter Hill film, Streets of Fire.
You are about to be married. You have 48 hours to have the time of your life. What do you do?
Guess that means we just have to go to Myrtle Beach.
Oh, that place.
Yes, well, you know.
Turn on the radio. Woo!
Come out here on the floor. Let's rock some more. Come out of here on the floor. Honey, let's rock.
A time of Elvis, Fabian, petal scarves, angel flips, itsy bitsy bikinis, sweet potatoes, and purple Jesus. Proper Southern girls weren't twisting it. They were shaking it to the Shag. Just when you thought life was a drag, along comes Shag.
Contagious. It's outrageous. It's John Waters' Desperate Living, starring Hollywood sex goddess Liz Renee.
Oh, that support feels heavenly.
Susan Lowe as androgynous Mole McHenry.
If you don't give me a sex change, I'll cut off your Peter and sew it on me myself.
And Nate Stoll as hysterical outpatient Peggy Gravel.
Get out of here, you stinking piece of flesh!
Yes, they've all had a lot of desperate living.
Ah! Oh, God! Find them, feel them, suck them, forget them! Is that your new motto? Ah! I'm a man, Muffy! A man trapped in a woman's body!
Follow the dead-end road to Mortville, USA.
Around you, it's a village of idiots!
Save her and fuck her!
Mortville, the bad taste town.
Dead, sir! I'm really not that hungry. Are you infectious, honey?
I don't know. My saliva tastes funny.
Watch the most perverse sex acts ever brought to the screen.
Harder!
Step into a world too desperate to play by the rules.
It isn't very pretty what a town without pity can do.
Desperate Living, featuring Edith Massey, the Egg Lady, as Queen Carlotta.
Hi, stupid! Hi, ugly!
Don't miss this rabid feast of cinema decadence from the creator of Pink Flamingos, John Waters' Desperate Living. It isn't very pretty. Coming soon from Saliva Films.
Living in the sixth dimension.
Just keep saying to yourself, it's only a movie.
Living in the sixth dimension.
It's only a movie. It's only a movie that will have you living in the sixth dimension. Moving in the wrong direction. A new fantasy musical. The Forbidden Zone.
20th Century Fox presents Phantom of the Paradise, a gothic horror story.
What was that?
Our love.
A beautiful love story.
Like a circus.
A cinematic odyssey through the rock universe. From Greece to glitter and beyond. The story of a sound, the man who created it, the girl who sang it, the monster who stole it, and the phantom who haunts the paradise, the ultimate rock palace.
There's one that is all around. There's
Phantom of the Paradise.
My music is for Phoenix. Only she can sing it. Anyone else that tries dies.
Phoenix.
Well,
you told me one time that you'd be somebody, that you weren't working just to survive.
Man, you better get yourself a castrato for this.
Paul Williams as Swan.
And the angels that defeated them.
I want you to stop terrorizing the paradise and rewrite your cantata.
And the Phantom.
Oh, stop from trying to. Only you might satisfy me.
Paradise.
There really is the Phantom.
Look out, get down. The Dark Town strutters are riding to town. They're fast as a jet, sharp as Gillette, and what you see is what you get.
But baby, I'm for real. I'm as real can get.
America, Shirley Washington, Trina Parks, Roger E. Mosley. Better move your butt when these ladies strut. Dark Town strutters strut to see it.